Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 385. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are James Jones.
Yep.
Guillaume Veillette.
Indeed.
And John Lindemann.
Man, it's tiring being an Iron Man, Johnny.
At this point, the streak is that you keep mentioning it.
Yeah, I mean...
That's the best streak.
It's not super impressive, John, I'll be honest.
Like, did it start being a streak at the second time? Like, I can't remember. Like,
was it already an achievement? I think I was guest hosting on his second episode of the streak and said, John, the Iron Man is here, or something along those lines.
The fact that it's now referred to as the streak, I think my mission is accomplished.
Boogie dad.
John's going to miss the next 31 episodes.
All right, guys. So let's kick it off. We've got a bunch of new business here. We're going to get through as much as we can. And coming up later, we've got your listener mail, some pre-E3 emails, and had pretty good responses to our predictions episode last week. So one person said it was their favorite thing that we do all year.
Even though he knows we hate it.
Yeah. That may be why he loves it so
much. That's probably why you assholes love it.
A lot of people said they appreciate it, even though they know that it makes us feel uncomfortable to predict things. But anyway, we got through it. We're done with predictions. We're just going to talk about games and news and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff. We actually have a couple of predictions from the audience to talk about in mail. But first up is new business, and Guillaume has a pretty brand new Wii U game to talk about.
Sure, I didn't get to talk about it last week because it was a special episode, but
very special episode.
Indeed, but I've been playing Scram Kitty and his buddy on Rails, which is probably, like, is it so far the worst title on Wii U?
No. It's real bad.
It's bad, but
I mean, it's intentionally bad, you know. It's meant to be so bad it's funny, I think.
Right. I understand why it's intentional. I don't understand why it's supposed to be funny, but
so just to clarify, because I have not played this game,
mm-hmm.
Is On Rails the name of his buddy, or is it a description of his buddy?
It's kind of a description. It's complicated.
You actually play as the buddy, I believe, mm-hmm. And Scram Kitty is the name of these characters that you're saving. They're little cats with space helmets on.
Right, actually, Scram Kitty is your cat, as far as I understand it. If you read the manual, I read the manual, because otherwise you have no context.
If you read the manual, you plebeian.
No, but you need to read the manual if you want to have any sort of context, because...
I don't need context for this game.
Right.
As you do.
So yeah, like, Scram Kitty is your cat. Turns out that he's been abducted by super intelligent mice. You know, because of course, scientists toyed with the laws of nature and tried to play God and, created some super intelligent mice in space, and they overtook the station and kidnapped all the kitties. So your goal is to save everyone's cats and, then save your own. And, you do that by, I don't know. Apparently, you had a handy spaceship that can cling to walls. And so the gameplay of this game is that you stick to walls. And so that means that you can go around like any surface, and you shoot straight ahead of you. And you've got these enemies popping out of everywhere, and you need to shoot them, and you need to kind of you need to do a lot of complicated platforming. So it's this platformer and shooter hybrid, and it's unlike anything I've played before. It's really, and the view is top down, so you're basically going up, down, left, and right the screen. Go watch a video. I'm terrible for describing games like this.
is that the future of RFN? No, fuck this. Just go watch a video.
It is an original game, and it is hard to explain.
Right.
It's a platformer, but it doesn't control or play like any other platformer, because
it is kind of reminiscent of all games, Super Mario Galaxy, because of the way it plays with gravity. You know, you can cling to the top wall, to the left, to the right, and when you jump, you actually go in weird arcs that you have very, you know, little control on, and it kind of plays with the gravity the way that Galaxy does, except maybe even more so, because in Galaxy, it's pretty much determined already in what direction you're going to go. Like, you're going to keep going straight if you go in an arc. But in this game, you can influence your trajectory and go all over the place. It's really confusing. And at first, when you're not used to controls, it's really, really, really hard. Just going through the tutorial levels, at first you think, wow, I've made a huge mistake spending $10 on this game. And you're not even, you know, at the meat of the levels. I was still going through the tutorial, basically, where you only have one cat to save at a time. And it's still teaching you, okay, so this kind of cat is going to run away from you and you need to catch it 3 times before you can actually capture it. Or this kind of cat will only appear when you shoot this kind of semi-mini-boss enemy and things like that. So I was still not through those levels that I was just pulling my hair out a little bit and thinking like, wow, this is really weird to control. But eventually, you get the hang of it, and you go back to the earlier levels, and you feel like a badass.
Yeah, they seem easy when you go back.
Yeah, it's really a great combination of shooter and platformer, and the levels really seem to alternate between kind of their focus. So you're going to have, you know, very tight, enclosed halls where you'll have to do a lot of shooting and you'll have to navigate basically, zigzag between two walls. And, it's going to be really, really fast paced. And then you're going to have other levels where, there's not really any outer walls. And instead you're going to have small, well, let's call them planetoids since we've already made the Super Mario Galaxy comparison. So you jump from one to the next and you navigate the level that way. And then you'll have, I don't know, some levels are more combat-focused, and there's really a surprising amount of variety. And in all of those levels, you've got 4 cats to rescue. There's one, the one that I mentioned, the Scaredy Cat, runs away from you, and you need to chase it around the level. And that is mostly a platforming challenge, and it's one of the most annoying ones to get. One just waits for you at the end of a level at the exit. Another one appears when you collect 100 doodads in the level. And the last one, you have to defeat this kind of mini-boss thing. And you can finish the game without rescuing all the cats. So there's a lot of freedom in choosing which levels you're going to tackle. If one of them is really too hard for you, just move on to the next one. And you've got multiple branches. So it does not have the same problem that Umi's Odyssey. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Yumi's Odd Odyssey.
Yumi's Odd Odyssey had. Like, they don't force you to find, like, the one secret exit before you can move on to next level. You've got a lot of freedom. And you've basically unlocked all of them once you've unlocked the final boss. And you only need, like, 70 cats out of, what, like, 120 or something. So it's okay. It's pretty good.
Like Mario 64.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I like Scram Kitty. I haven't played it as much as you, I think, but I've put a couple hours into it, and you know, it's very polished. I mean, it's an indie game, but it has a nice presentation to it. The music is cool, the graphics are nice, and the gameplay is just really interesting. It seems gimmicky at first, but I think actually they do a lot with the ideas here, and
right,
and there's some real depth to it. Like, you know, Guillaume didn't talk too much about the shooting, but the weird thing about the shooting is that you can only shoot directly out, straight out from basically perpendicular from whatever wall you're attached to.
Right, and if you look at old trailers from last year, you can see that you could angle your shots before, you could aim. And they remove that. And you can see also in the videos that it's mostly, like, the levels seem mostly unchanged. So it looks like they just went like, okay, well, if you can aim your shots, it's not really, the game is not as unique anymore. Let's try to focus on this whole sticking to walls mechanic and shooting straight ahead of you.
Well, the cool thing there is that, you know, the enemies that you're fighting, they kind of float around, they move in these erratic patterns. And in or as you chase around them and try to shoot them, a lot of times the wall that you're attached to will curve and move around. And so you'll be facing different directions as you move back and forth trying to shoot these enemies. And so the angle of your shots will change. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the combat kind of revolves around finding the right surface at the right time to shoot from, because the enemies aren't that hard. They usually don't dodge that quickly or anything. It's more about you understanding how the enemies in the level interact with each other. And as you move around the level, that changes constantly. So I found that really, it's a bit of spatial reasoning that I'm not used to, but it's a game that, because it's so different than anything you've played before, you're not going to be good at it at first. And you have to spend some time with it and you will notice yourself getting better. And it's really fun to kind of like Guillaume said, to go back to earlier levels. Cause you can, like you said, you can move on from a level without fully completing it. And I like the non-linearity of it. The world map has a lot of different alternate paths and you open gates depending on how many cats you've saved. So you can, you know, pretty quickly you have a lot of different choices of where to go. So you're not going to feel stuck, I don't think, after the first three or four levels. But it's nice to go back and try to complete the earlier levels and feel like you've really mastered something that gave you a lot of trouble earlier on. And that's a really nicely done platformer when you can get that feeling.
When you start out, you think, okay, this is going to be some sort of Metroid-like progression. I guess I'm going to get more weapons and I'm going to get more powerful and I'm going to come back to this and I'm going to be better. Yeah, it turns out that no, you're just going to get better at playing the game. And yeah, you're going to, you know, kick those early levels asses, but it's just through your own, you know, improved skill. So that's really, really satisfying. And some of the enemies are bastards. I mean, they don't have really great AI, but some of them will hug the walls that you're stuck on. And yeah. So you will have to kind of jump over them and try to outmaneuver them. And it becomes really satisfying. It's really unlike anything I've played before. And it's really satisfying. It's really fun.
I like it. Yeah. It should be noted though, you can't really play this game on the TV. You pretty much have to play it on the gamepad unless there's an option to switch.
Yeah, you can just press minus.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't even... I should have read the manual.
Exactly. Yes. That's why you read the fucking manual.
Yeah, but it doesn't just clone the display. It actually is. It's nice. By default, you play on the gamepad screen. And what shows on the TV is a view that's similar to what you're seeing when you play the game, but it also has a bunch of additional information. And sometimes a cat will show up there and he'll talk about what's happening in the game or he'll give hints, or the view will kind of pan around or zoom in or to kind of enhance the visual. And I think it's meant for basically, it's a one player game, but I think that's meant to have spectators, you know, have other people in the room to make it easy for them to watch what you're doing and to give them a little more context. And maybe even they read a hint on the screen and tell you about it, because you can't see that when you're playing on the gamepad. So it's kind of a nice little thing. And it's good to hear that if you do want to play on the TV, you can just flip the displays. But I kind of like that. It's a level of like, it's very well thought out in a way that you might not expect from a kind of indie game on the eShop that only costs $10.
Right. It's been in development for a while, and it is a Wii U exclusive. So I think that they were trying to find specifically things that you can do on the Wii U that you can't do on the other consoles.
That's kind of a minor feature, but it's nice. You know, I mean, some people will probably find it very useful. A lot of people just won't care, but it's nice that they did it.
Yeah, it's surprisingly good. A surprisingly good spectator game. I was told it's very hypnotic, just with the music and the kind of neon colors. So yeah, cool game. Anyone with a Wii U, I would say go get it. If you like tough shooters.
All right, so James, why don't you tell us what you've been playing?
Yeah, I've been playing some weird things. As usual. I'll start with. I mentioned a few weeks ago that GameStop was doing one of their. We're trying to clear out our supply of used PS3 and 360 games. And I collected a small hoard during that particular event. And one of the ones I ended up with, just happens to be the one I was playing most recently, is the Atlus title Catherine. Specifically, I got it for the 360. And the game's real, real fucked. I enjoy the fact that I started playing it a couple days before they announced the Wii U release of Pushmo, because it's basically just the same game.
Yeah, they're similar.
It is very similar, yeah.
Well, I say that tongue firmly in cheek.
Okay. they look similar on paper, at least.
I mean, the basic gameplay of Catherine is that you have to climb a vertical wall by pushing and pulling blocks or sliding them side to side. There's some more strategies that make it more complicated. It's definitely a much more challenging experience than Pushmo, especially if you turn the difficulty way up. I mean, some of these are real hard, and the bottom is essentially falling out the whole time, so you have to move really quickly.
Yeah, sounds stressful.
It is. It's incredibly stressful. But the conceit of Catherine isn't that it's a climbing game. I mean, that is a big part of the game. The conceit is that the climbing is actually a dream, and what's really going on is you are in control of a guy who is in a long-term relationship and has just recently started cheating on his girlfriend but can't remember any of it ever happening. Oh, and also you have to make constant moral decisions. And then there's some weird thing about if he fails in the dream, he dies for real. And it appears there are other people in the world, like other people he interacts with, also having the same dream as him. And you could talk to them during the dream, but nobody really remembers. It's super weird.
Okay, so when you say that there's some sort of morality system, I'm not really happy to see that happening even in puzzle games. Please tell me it's not like, you know, choose the red option to kick puppies or...
No. It's basically... basically, you're constantly given the opportunity to interact with your girlfriend, who you just found out is pregnant, or this voluptuous bombshell psychopath that just seems to show up in your apartment every morning.
And they're both named Catherine, right?
They're both named Catherine, one with a K, one with a C. Your girlfriend with the K is a stone cold bitch. I mean, she is a jerk. The Catherine with the C is a psychopath. And basically how you interact with them determines, you know, if you're being faithful, which they regard as being more moral, or if you're being, you know, more lustful, going after the other Catherine.
Was his mom named Catherine as well? Like, he seems to have issues.
No, you never meet his mother.
Okay.
The best part, though, is that this conceit holds through the Japanese version of the game, which makes me so happy. But they're just like, no, we're going to keep that name for everything. It'll be great. The story itself is super messed up, but kind of in an enjoyable way. The puzzle component, you know, I've been fairly vociferous whenever Pushmo comes up that I don't find it to be that good of a game. I don't find it to be challenging. I think it's too, you know, just push. All right, that didn't work. Try something else. This is the exact opposite. This is me constantly feeling like, oh my god, I'm gonna screw this up. Just constant nervousness, and just on edge the entire time I play it, which I hate while it's happening, but enjoy it in retrospect. If that makes sense.
So this meets your needs more than Pushmo.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm. Not only can you do more with the blocks, and there's more strategies of things to do with the blocks, it's a much faster game, and yet you probably have to do a hell of a lot more climbing. And in fact, in some cases, there are boss levels where there is a horrific, gigantic representation of his girlfriend, or, you know, in one case, it was a demonic-looking giant baby that just kept crying, why are you running away from me, and things like that, while it tried to kill you. It's real, just super weird, and I kind of enjoy it for that, and I'm also kind of have to put it down sometimes, just walk away for a while. It's right on that edge of being amazing and unsettling.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that you like this game.
I like and fear this game is probably the best way of putting it. Like, when I start this game up every time, I'm thinking, oh god, what am I in for this time? And then I just sort of push through and go, yep, that was weird. It's not a very upbeat game, let's put it that way. It can be kind of dark in a lot of ways. And not just because if you die in the game, you die for real. But, like, just the morality play involved is kind of dark sometimes. It has a weird component. It's well written for what it is. but it has this weird component of just sort of examining the worst parts of people, not just yourself or your respective Catherines, but your friends, the people around you. You kind of start to see, you know, the darkness in people. It's a little out there. I appreciate the game for what it is.
All right.
It's weird.
So John is up next with his new business.
All right, not really so much new business, but I do have some final thoughts on Super Mario Brothers 3. Did some traveling over the weekend, and I had a chance to actually sit down and push forward. I think I'm at near the end of the seventh world now, and some of these levels. Let me just say that some of their design choices I find puzzling for a game that gives you limited lives. Now, there's ways for you to kind of farm lives and stuff like that, and of course you have power-ups to sort of extend, but there are some of these later levels, holy crap. The kind of stuff they throw at you just seems to kind of force you to churn through lives or churn through power-ups, one or the other, like World 7-7, World 7-8, where you have to get an invincibility star and keep getting them all the way through because what's under you will kill you, and you have to keep getting them all the way through. Or you can just pretty much, if you do if you're able to get one of the suits that lets you fly, you can just fly through and breeze by everything. But that's, yeah.
There's a reprise of that in the Star World of New Super Mario Brothers U. Yeah. There's a level where it's not exactly the same thing, but you have to keep hitting P switches to turn, because the floor of the entire level is made of coins. And you have to keep hitting P switches before the previous one runs out, or else you'll just fall off the world. And it's really, like, the whole level probably takes less than a minute to play if you do it correctly, but it took me easily 100 tries to beat it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that I'm finding, where a lot of these levels, they require you to have kind of a perfect run, which can be maddening when you only have a certain number of lives, and also the way that it punishes you after in various ways punishes, you know, takes you back to the last level you completed, you know, spins you across the map, does all this stuff to you. So yeah, it's tough, man. I gotta say that I would probably have more tolerance for it if I would have played it when it came out, because back then I was more used to beating my head against NES games. But as it stands, it's hard to come back to this game and really justify a lot of the stuff that they have you go through.
Right. I just played through it with the girlfriend, and yes, I've played the game before, and I was beating most of the levels, but she did surprisingly well in many of the World 6, World 7 levels. It is frustrating, and we are losing a lot of lives, but it's hard to get tired of this game when all the levels have their own gimmick and they're all kind of unique. You know, the Karibo shoe, which everyone remembers fondly. Well, that's only in one level, and it's pretty amazing. You know,
it is awesome though.
It is. Of course, not all the gimmicks are that amazing. Like, we like Karibo's shoe because it's pretty kick ass, but, some of the other levels are just kind of bastards. But at least you're not doing the same thing over and over again.
No, you're not. You're not. It's just the wild spikes, you know.
It's sometimes like some
levels you'll just kind of breeze through, and then some they just absolutely kill you. Just way, way high on the difficulty chart. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad game at all by any means. It's really good. It's just, man, it spikes up there.
So you're saying Mario 3 is good?
It's a good game. I mean, I can't deny that it's a good game.
That's not what I understood from before we started recording.
It's just frustrating, and honestly, I mean, there's a lot of times when I'm just like, you know, fuck this game, honestly, because
I was told there was going to be a fuck Super Mario 3 and all of its fans moment here.
No,
yeah,
I had
my pitchfork ready.
I never said
why
that.
Why are you reneging on your promise?
I never said that.
Stuff?
I mean, I would say, believe me, there have been many times in the course of playing through this game where I've said, fuck this game. Really? Are you kidding me? You actually want me to do this shit? No, yeah, there's been a lot of that. But overall, I mean...
I feel like we have been misled.
Well, maybe I was misled into believing that I would enjoy playing through Super Mario Brothers 3. How's about that?
Are you saying maybe
how's about
you
that?
Were misled?
How's about misled that, James? How's about that for a little fuck you to Super
you
Mario Brothers 3 moment?
Were you saying maybe you were misled into believing this is a good game?
No. It's a game, James. I'll give it that.
It's a game?
I welcome the variety of opinions. I mean, I love Mario 3.
I don't know why this game is as beloved as it is. I just don't know. I really don't know.
I mean, certainly I did play it when I was really young and I had a lot of time and a lot of patience. And, you know, back then we wanted games to be hard. To me, Mario 3, a lot of Nintendo's games back then were hard, but just easy enough to get through with a lot of patience and skill, you know, whereas like there were other games that I played back then that I thought were just too hard straight up because they, you know, they were arcade games or whatever, and they really didn't care about you ever finishing the game. But like Mario 3 obviously was not an arcade game. And I guess I always felt that it was really tough, but really fair.
See, I think totally the opposite. I don't think it's fair in a lot of ways.
Well, and that's my memory of it, because I haven't, you know, I only played through the first couple of worlds recently, but my memory was that it was fair. And they also, they build in a lot of things like the power-ups, like the inventory, like the mini games where you can earn a bunch of one-ups and additional power-ups, things like the warp whistles and the keys and the hammers. There's a lot of shortcuts, and there's, you know, there's ways to get around levels, because back then we weren't so concerned with like trying to play through the game continuously from start to finish and play through every single level. Like, I don't think we ever did that. I don't think we ever even tried to do that. It was more either you're going to try to get to a specific world to try to play some of those levels that you've seen less of, you know, like you're going to try to go explore a little bit, or you're going to make a run and try to beat the game. And if you try to beat the game, you're going to skip the levels that give you the most trouble. You're going to use the warp whistles whenever you can, and you're going to save up all the P-Wings and fire flowers and stars and everything else that you can. And you know, because you've played through it a bunch of times, you know the levels where you really need those power-ups. There's entire levels in World 8 that I don't know that I've ever played through without just equipping a P-Wing and just flying over the entire thing.
Right.
I'll believe that. Yeah.
Like, some of those airship levels are insanely hard. Yep. As a kid, I was like, that's okay. I have a way to get past this. It's okay if I don't beat it the right way. You know, and I think the idea of playing through Mario 3 every single world in a row using save states or whatever to try to play through the game without warping and without skipping any levels, I think that's a relatively modern, I'm sure people did it back then, but like the desire to do it that way, I think is fairly modern, because I remember as a kid, we were just happy to beat it. I mean, it's a hard game. We were very satisfied to beat it any way that we could.
Yeah. I mean, the real problems I have is areas where, you know, a challenge is presented to you and it's pretty clear what you have to do and you get through it. But then at the very end, when you think you've escaped the fire, you get burned by an enemy placement that is right directly where you land after you run through this gauntlet of bullshit. And it's like, that's just fucking cheap. No way you cut it. I mean, you know, just the enemy placement and stuff like the enemy placement right under it's not the flag, but the little roulette wheel at the end. Like, enemy placements there where you're just trying to run for your life and get the hell out. And they just happen to place an enemy right there, which kills you, so you go all the way back to the beginning of the level. Stuff like that, I can only tolerate that stuff for so long with that
game.
Yeah,
but those enemies, like, they're few and far between, and they're usually placed in a way that if you just run to the box thing and you jump at the right time, you're gonna avoid the enemy and it's gonna turn into a coin and you're gonna be fine. I guess it's more if you're not running towards the goal like that, and if you don't react fast enough, like you don't jump enough fast enough, then you're gonna have a problem. But
I just have very little patience for this game. That's really all I can tell you. I have very little patience, and in fact, you know, I didn't really like it that much when I first played it back in probably late 90, because I didn't get it when it first came out. I think I played it at a friend's house, and I was like, wow, I'm not really a fan of this.
The spots that really frustrated me were these levels where you obviously needed a fire flower, or you obviously needed the raccoon tail, and then you're just small Mario, and you have nothing in your inventory. That's annoying, because some of those parts are really almost impossible to get through unless you have the right power-up.
I just find that my inventory is really clogged with a whole bunch of, invincibility stars, and those really aren't that useful, aside from maybe a handful of levels.
Right, the ones where you just fight the enemy. Yeah, exactly.
They're good for Hammer Brothers.
Yeah, but very, very few.
All right, well...
Yeah, fuck that game. I'll say it. Fuck that game.
There, good.
If World 7 annoys you, I can't imagine what you're going to think about World 8, because it is really, really
nothing,
difficult.
Nothing, because he's probably not going to go play it.
Pretty much.
All right, so let's move on. I've been playing a game that came out a few months ago. I've talked about it, I think, maybe just once before, that is Pokemon Y. I bought it when it first came out, and I played it for, I don't know, 10 hours probably, and then put it down for a long time. And this past weekend, I was traveling. I was going to Chicago to go see the Crosstalk guys and record a bunch of shows with them. And so I was on the plane, played some Pokemon Y. And, you know, I'm remembering a lot of things that I appreciated about it at the time. And I think the main reason I stopped playing it back then is that I just got really tied up with other things. I was moving around that time, and that disrupted me. And then you know, other things came out. Professor Layton came out, and I played that for not very long either. That's another one I'm going to go back to. Anyway, Pokemon Y is really good, guys. We don't talk about Pokemon very much on this show, even though some of us like it a fair bit. You know, and I'll go back to what really impressed me, even the second time around, it impressed me all over again, was the graphics are really nice, really, really nice, and a lot of the monsters look great in 3D. And that was really the reason I bought this game, is I was like, well, finally they put some effort into it, and they've, you know, finally brought this game into the modern era. And I think they did a great job with it. And you know, in a game that is so much about the characters, it's about the personalities and the designs of these monsters and all the cool animations and things that they're doing, having them look nice in 3D graphics, you know, where you get so much more detail and so much more livelihood to them, I think it adds a lot to the experience. And the other thing I really like about it is that I think this game respects your time a lot more than previous Pokemon games have, because, and some fans actually complained about this. I was really surprised, but it's much easier to level up your characters than it has been in the old games, because you, very early in the game, you get an item called Experience Share. And that divides up the experience among all your Pokemon. The one you actually use in battle get extra, but you don't have to constantly swap in and out monsters just to get them experience. If you have a monster in your party, it will gain levels. And coming from, I mean, I can remember back in Pokemon Blue, having Magikarp in the first slot, you know, so that he would always get credit for having been involved in the battle, even though I would immediately switch him out as soon as I had a chance. Like, that's tedious, you know, and that puts you at a disadvantage in battle, because you waste a turn switching out a useless Pokemon, and you have to do it for friggin' ever, because, you know, some of those monsters are completely useless until they evolve at level 20 or whatever. So, Pokemon X and Y really get away from that, and they say, hey, if you want to level up a monster, we're going to make it easy to do. And, that is really nice for, you know, someone like me who has way too many games to play. It's hard for me to focus in on one game for 100 hours. I feel like I'm making progress much more steadily in Pokemon Y, and that's a problem I've had with Blue. I definitely had it with Crystal, and I definitely had it with Diamond, and I think those are the previous ones, all of them that I played. But a lot of times what I find is I get about halfway through the story, and I get really bogged down in trying to catch a bunch of monsters, trying to level up a bunch of monsters for no particular reason other than it seems like I should. And it's satisfying to do a lot of grinding in the game, but I end up doing it so much that I forget where I am supposed to go, what I'm supposed to do. And I have to say, like, these games do a really bad job of kind of building up a world that feels continuous, because it takes a long time to go from one place to another on foot. And you can fly, but not until pretty late in the game. And that's just a teleport. But also, all the paths that connect one city to the next, they just all have numbers. You know, it's like Route 13, Route 37. It's like, this doesn't mean anything to anybody. Like, if I wrote it down, if I had a map open in front of me, I could identify them. But calling something Route 8 really doesn't mean anything, especially when you're in the middle of the town, like the big city that's in the center of the world, Lumio City, which looks really nice, although it is also very confusing to get around because the camera switches a lot. But when you meet characters in a cafe in the middle of the city and they say, you should go check out Route 7. There's some really good monsters over there. And I'm like, I don't know how to get to Route 7. I don't know what that means. I've probably been there before and I don't even remember which one it was. The world is just a little bit nondescript sometimes, and I think that's kind of a problem because it's so zoomed in. Like, you never see a world map in Pokemon. You never see it zoomed out to get a sense of geography of where this stuff is. I mean, you kind of do, but not. It's not like in a Final Fantasy game where you leave town and suddenly you see the town. You know, you see everything really zoomed out. You see where the town is. You can actually usually see the next town. And now you just have to find a pathway through the rivers and the woods to get over there. And everything is very kind of macro scaled. In Pokemon, it's zoomed in. The scale of the towns is the same as the scale of the fields.
Like an Earthbound.
Yeah, like an Earthbound. And that's okay. And you can make that work. But you have to do some things, I think, to connect these places, to develop a sense of geography for the player. And I don't really think Pokemon does a good job of that.
Are you stating that this game does not have a world map?
If it does, I don't know where to find it. But
because every Pokemon game I've ever played has a
understood.
World map.
And as I said, it probably does, but also the menus are fucking confusing in this game.
Yeah, it is menu overload now, and especially the newer Pokemon games, so much stuff to wade through.
Because they've never really cleaned up the menu systems from the old games. They just grandfather it all in. And let me just put it this way. This game I've seen two completely different menus for teaching moves to a Pokemon who already has four moves. So depending on whether you get into that from the evolution screen or whether you get in it from the item screen or whether it just happens at the end of a battle because you leveled up, you can actually see different versions of that interface. The bottom screen when you're playing is completely overloaded with a bunch of symbols that you don't know what they mean and a bunch of different screens that some of them do the same thing in two different places. You can hit start to go to one set of menus to get to your bag to use items, or you can push X to get to a different menu to get to your bag to use items, or you can touch a little icon down on the screen to get to your bag to use items, or you can flip through at the top of the touch screen to get to different pages where some of that, like I keep meeting a character who's telling me about, what is it? They're like, he calls them OS, I think. They're like, they're special abilities that you're supposed to share with friends. They're like social abilities, and they can level up your character or your Pokemon or something. And I meet this guy in Pokemon centers in every town in the game, and he always gives me new abilities, and he says, make sure you use these because they level up the more that you use them. I have no idea how to use them. I don't know where to find them. The menus are so confusing, and they're not labeled properly.
I'm starting to think that the same team designed the Wii U interface.
it's worse than that because it feels like there's all this legacy bullshit from 18 other Pokemon games and they just keep piling on top of it over and over and over again. And they never really clean up the stuff underneath. They just add new features.
Yeah, it's like, oh, now you have a Pokemon Watch. You know, press select to bring up your Pokemon Watch. And within that, there's 18 things buried in there. Oh, and then you get a Pokemon Chronometer. Press start to bring that up. It just gets ridiculous.
It's endlessly complicated. And you know, I think part of the brilliance of Pokemon, part of the reason it's been so successful is that it is complicated. And kids like that. Kids like the idea that the game trusts them to figure this stuff out. It trusts them to talk with each other and learn how to do things and share secrets with each other. And it trusts you to read what the game tells you and to read the rules and to read what people tell you and to figure this stuff out. And I'm not saying they need to dumb it down for kids. They need to dumb it down for me because I ain't got time for that shit. Mm-hmm. They need to – it's so – this game is seriously needing elegance in the user interface. Mm-hmm. And look, it's a very simple RPG. I can do without most of that stuff. I mean, a lot of that stuff is bonus features that I probably wouldn't need to use anyway.
Trying to figure out how to get on all the online modes is ridiculous, too.
Yeah, I don't even know how to play this game online. I really don't. They need to clean this up a lot. But playing the game itself is actually really nice. And the RPG parts of it, I think they have actually improved in a lot of meaningful ways. And you know, some of the monster designs are really fun. I mean, there's a character it's a cow that stands on two legs called Miltank. It's pink, and it has like 8 big udders sticking out on the front. It looks ridiculous. And as soon as I saw that thing out in battle, I said, I gotta have that thing.
I'm just so scared by the mental image that I have right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of really crazy, bizarro things in this game. And I don't even use that thing. I mean, it's not even necessarily a useful Pokemon, or maybe it is. I don't know. but I love having it. I love being able to go look at it because it's stupid. So I'm a fan of the monster design still. I think they really do some interesting things with it. I like this game. It is very addictive, and I like the feeling that I'm actually making good progress with the story. I'm getting pretty close to the end now. I think I've got most of the badges, and I'm hopeful that I'm actually going to be able to complete it. And, I'm not going to get into all the Pokemon inbreeding and genetic manipulation and weird stuff that people get into. I'm just happy if I can beat the game. You know, if I can play through it, I can see a lot of cool monsters. I can go to some neat places. You solve some like little tiny puzzles. Like actually some of the gyms in this game do some pretty cool stuff with, not so much platforming, but they'll set up kind of an interesting, environment where you're trying to climb around on things. You go up ropes, you go down slides, you go around the levels. Some of them will rotate. So you actually kind of have to go around, four different sides of the tower as you climb up. And that stuff's fun, you know, like it's a small part of the game, but they really put some thought into it. And, the gyms really are kind of the set pieces of the Pokemon universe. So I like that they put a little more effort into it and really kind of tried to thematically build up an interesting place for you to go to that's not just a corridor of trainers that you have to just walk down like a gauntlet. You know, they've made them feel like places. They actually feel more like gyms, you know. Some of them even remind me of, do you remember that Nickelodeon show Guts where they had the aggro crag at the end and you had to climb to the top of it and grab something at the top? Like some of them actually kind of feel like that, the gym designs in this game. And I think that's it's a neat little addition to the series. All right. So, with the time we have remaining, maybe a few minutes, why don't we circle back around and, first up, let's hear from Guillaume.
Yeah, sure. I've also been participating in Mega May, and so I've been playing Mega Man 4 on the Game Boy. Came out last week, and it's pretty good. I'm not a super, you know, Mega Man connoisseur, I guess. I don't, since I only played the NES games on the collection that came out of the GameCube, and I kind of went through them one after the other. I couldn't tell you, okay, this boss was in this game and this Robot Master was in that game. And, here's which game I think has the best weapons. And, you know, I couldn't even tell you which one I found the worst or which one was the best. But, Mega Man 4 is pretty damn good. It's really doing some things that I haven't seen in the NES games before, even though it, you know, just recycles Robot Masters from the NES games, from Mega Man 4 and 5. For instance, there's this weapon, the one that, like, Bright Rain, or I can't remember what it's called. It can actually put out fires in certain stages, and you need that to access certain secrets.
Oh, that's more like they did that, started doing that in Mega Man X on the console games.
Hmm. And they it's kind of similar like that. Yeah. And there's more, they toy with non-linear levels, more. For instance, Napalm Man stage, has a lot of branching paths and, a lot of them leads to kind of, dead ends where you'll find an extra life or a power up, and other places where it's just a completely alternate route where you'll have a different, platforming challenge than you would have in the other path. So it's pretty damn impressive. The only problem is that starting with, I think, Mega Man 3 on a Game Boy, they got a little bit more ambitious with the graphics and the Game Boy couldn't really handle it. So these games have a ton of slowdown. And
ooh,
sometimes I find the slowdown to be more of a feature than a bug, you know, like it's kind of, it looks cool and it helps you. But in this game, there's a lot of sequences where you're platforming over a pit and you get slowed down and it completely screws you over. So that is less fun.
Do you think you'll be checking out Mega Man 5, which is the heralded, completely original Game Boy Mega Man?
Yeah, I've played that game to death. I'll probably download it, but I used to own it as a kid. It's also really good. But yeah, for one last thing I want to mention about it is that the difficulty is really uneven. The first four Robot Masters, their stages, I just went through them without really any kind of trouble at all. And I actually don't know what the kind of chain of weaknesses to weapons is, because you can take them all out with the Mega Blaster, the Mega Buster, and they're all kind of easy to take down that way. So that's kind of weird. And then it was like Crystal Man's stage. His stage is just a bastard with things that pop up and down and platforms that appear at the last minute, while the platforms that you were on previously are just crumbling and crushing you, or it's just, it took me maybe 20 tries and it was extremely frustrating. So yeah, uneven difficulty, but still they do some, it's very ambitious and they do some really interesting stuff. So any Mega Man fan, check it out.
Will do. Especially, I'm definitely going to check out 5, because that's a game I've always wanted to play.
Yeah, original music, original Robot Masters. It's, you can't go wrong.
Awesome. Okay, so James, I know you have kind of a bigger game to talk about. Might need to hold that for next week, but we can all contribute to a game that John's going to talk about.
Yeah, I hooked up my Wii U. It had been kind of on the bench for a while, pulled it out, and hooked it up, of course, did the prerequisite system update, which happens seemingly if you have your console, any console nowadays, on the bench for more than a month. But we got review codes for I've Got to Run, which is by Four Corner Games. And it's an endless runner. And it has three different modes. It has the endless classic mode, in which you control Marshmallow Boy, I believe is the yeah, character in this one. Runs through a kitchen. An endless series of platforms set in a kitchen. And there's also endless double, which I believe allows you to double jump. And then there is endless special, which allows you to do double jump and also collect items. I haven't been too far in it, so I don't know if they switch it up at all later on down the line, but allows you to collect items that speed you up and slow you down. So you have to kind of strategically navigate the platforms to make sure that you hit everyone properly.
Yeah, that's all there is to it. I mean, they're all three very simple, but they're randomly generated levels. So
yeah, if anyone has played the Cannibalt, it's kind of the same principle. You just run for infinity, and the platforms come at you kind of at random. Although the developer of this game assured us that all the platforms, you can actually make the jumps. It's some sort of algorithm that ensures that they're all fair, which I didn't feel was the case when I was playing Cannibalt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cloudberry Kingdom does the same thing, where it will only give you a level that is completable.
Right.
But some are a lot harder than others. And some of the levels that I've come across and I've got to run are pretty tough combinations of platforms. I think with the double jump, that's a lot more forgiving, obviously, because you can save yourself from a bad fall, and you can use it to get up to higher platforms, even if you kind of didn't launch off at the best possible time. But the endless basic, where you only have the single jump, that's like some really pure, it's basically just pure timing. I mean, there's nothing else to it. You're pushing any button on the controller makes you jump, and that's all there is to it. But it's very exacting. You have to really be precise with the timing of your jumps to get very far into it.
I don't know. I got addicted for maybe an evening to Cannibalt, mostly because of the music, which is pretty kick-ass. And also, it kind of had this cool setting where you see these robots destroying buildings in the background. So you imagine, okay, it's some sort of apocalypse going on, and you gotta run. In this case, Marshmallow Boy in the kitchen, you kind of have to wonder, are these, like, how come these platforms are infinite? You know, like, is he running in circles? If he's running in circles, how come the background doesn't change? It's just, I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it. It's important.
I think you're overthinking it.
Yeah, I didn't read the manual, but I'm guessing there's not much of a story to this game. It's very, very simple. You know, it's really about kind of zoning out, I think. And there is something hypnotizing about a game like this. you can kind of get into a groove and sort of zone out. And and the goal is really just to see how long you last, because what you're doing doesn't change that much. But you it because it doesn't repeat, it's randomly generated. So you can never let your guard down. So you kind of you don't want to overthink it, but you don't want to underthink it. And trying to keep like your awareness of what you're doing and the timing and the, you know, the visual of what's happening. It's like it's kind of a careful balance of like concentrating on it just enough, and I think there's something to that. But I mean, this is really I would call it a mini game. I mean, it's kind of a it's like something you might find in Game & Watch in terms of the simplicity of it. But you know, Game & Watch games can be very addictive, and it's a high score game, obviously. So the game isn't out yet as of this recording. I think it comes out next week. As a high score screen. And the idea there is that it actually has a message on there that says, take a screenshot and post this to Miiverse. And that's the leaderboard system of the game. So Seren, who made the game and is a friend of the show and gave us the codes, that's her way of sort of implementing online leaderboards. And, you know, I think it's a good idea. I mean, Miiverse supports that. And if you make the interface really simple to do that, it's a good way to keep track of it.
Yeah, it's something to play while you're watching TV, while you're doing something else. Although you're not going to do very well if you're distracted.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just, you know, about, you know, like Johnny said, how far you can go, you know, what you can accomplish, and, you know, really comparing your high scores to others. So I think $2 is actually a pretty good price point for it, because you can get quite a bit of play out of it. For $2.
Yeah. And one of the nice things is this contributes a lot to the addiction quality of it. But as soon as you die, you immediately respawn. Like the game doesn't even stop scrolling. The scrolling never stops. If you die, you start over, you know, back at the beginning with a brand new randomly generated sequence. But there is no way. It's not even like in BitTrip Runner where you have to watch the level like rewind. You know that, but that's a very different kind of game because those levels are designed up front. They're always the same. But in this game, it's just immediately you can die many, many, many times, and you never really stop playing. So you have to be very thoughtful about, yes, okay, I'm going to quit now. And you have to actually like hit the start button and go back to the title screen, because it will not do that for you. It'll just let you play forever.
Or just leave it running and watch it die over and over again.
James would do that.
Let's take a break, guys. And when we come back, we're going to do some listener mail, including some really good pre-E3 questions.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
All right, we have a review of Mario Golf World Tour Flower DLC Pack by Neil Ronahan. RFN had the audacity to dig into the dark practices of Nintendo's DLC for Mario Golf. Our expose ruffled some feathers, but now Neil has got into the dark heart of this pyramid scheme, and it turns out he enjoys it. And we also have a review for The Amazing Spider-Man 2 by Zach Miller. Spider-Man, when are we going to get a game where you play as Peter Parker and have to live the life of being a college student and photojournalist? I mean, who cares about a dude who gets off on wearing spandex and climbing buildings? That's stuff for Good Morning America, not serious gamers such as myself. I guess Zach is okay with it, so I guess that's fine. You're on notice for Amazing Spider-Man 3. Serious gamers.
Serious gamers such as yourself, myself, John.
Yes.
We have a preview, Digging Deep into Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire by Alex Kulafi. It had been about a few months since Nintendo released a Pokemon game. So what better thing for Nintendo to do than to port everyone's favorite Pokemon generation to 3DS? Alex took 30 seconds of video and made hundreds of words out of it. More info than you'd ever imagine is now yours on the latest Pokemon remake.
We have a feature, Nintendo Collector's Journal by Justin Berube. Look, I've been harping on how out of hand Collector's Journal has become over the last few months. The guys running this feature are devoted to the cause of collecting. This time we get some cards and some store cutouts, and also apparently there's a 3DS XL for Disney's Magical World, which longtime RFN listeners will know friend of the show Curtis Bones loved.
Yeah, Curtis actually also has a new a new video feature called Nintendo Weekly Is it Nintendo Weekend Report?
Yeah, something like that, yes.
And it's green screen-tastic. And Curtis is a really funny, natural host. So you should check that out on YouTube and on our website. We post links to that as well. Comes out every Saturday, I think. They're super goofy and really fun. And if you like Curtis, I know a lot of people like Curtis when he was on the show recently, and as well you should. So go check out that as well. But we also have a preview this week called Living It Up in Tomodachi Life by Scott Thompson. Let's not beat around the bush. Tomodachi Life is a weird game. I mean, seriously, it's weird. I'm not really going to elaborate because I don't have to. Scott did for us. Enjoy. And finally, we have a feature called Staff Says Mario Kart Tracks. The NWR staff gives their favorite and least favorite Mario Kart tracks. Baby Park, both. Alright, so lots of stuff going on over at the website. Please go check it out. You will enjoy it. It's all over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back, everyone. It is time for listener mail, and as always, the address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Please email us like these people. The first email this week is going to be read by Guillaume.
Manny writes, assuming that the next Zelda game for Wii U will be revealed at E3, what are the chances that the graphics could look like the tech demo from 2011? Based on your knowledge of the hardware, is it even possible?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I think it'll look better Definitely. Than that.
Yeah. I disagree.
I think it'll look better than that. So I saw that demo. I manipulated it. It wasn't really playable. It was a video essentially, but it was a it was a real time cutscene that you could move the camera around.
It was rendering in real time on
something.
Wii U like hardware. Yeah.
It might not have been actual Wii U, and this was, you know, well more than a year before the system launched. So.
Yeah, I'm almost certain it probably wasn't real Wii U's, considering how far out the system was at that point.
I mean, even at the time, I thought, well, this looks really nice. This looks like I would expect Zelda. It was almost like too obvious in terms of the art design and everything. I mean, it was a very straightforward kind of adaptation of, you know, kind of like a Twilight Princess or even an Ocarina 60, you know, Ocarina of Time art style into HD. And it was really, it was not a Zelda game. It wasn't touted as a Zelda game. It was just a graphics demo where they use Zelda assets because they're familiar and you have some expectation of what they should look like. And it looked really nice, but it wasn't like the most jaw-droppingly beautiful thing you've ever seen. And I would expect, not only can the Wii U do that, I think it can do better than that. At the very least, I think the art style will probably be a little more interesting than what they showed there. I think they'll probably do, they, you know, the last decade especially, they've really always done something to kind of spruce up the art style in these Zelda console games. So
yeah, and not only the graphics were, you know, well, not only the demo, like it was not a playable demo, it was not a game, but also I thought that the gamepad use was kind of limited and the things you could do in I think you could slightly change the angle, if I recall correctly, but watching.
Yeah, but you could change the camera angle, and then you could also toggle the lighting on and off.
Right, but it was not to the extent...
Some torches or something that you could turn on and off.
But it was not to the extent that the Japanese Garden demo allowed you to view different things on the gamepad and change the angle, like where you were looking at stuff from. So it was very, very limited.
Yes, absolutely. And that was...
I mean, they've also had a lot of time to get
those
familiar
are,
with
those
the hardware,
are incredibly too. Different things, though.
Yeah. It was 3 years ago, right? 2011? 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. So,
Did not spend a lot of time with that demo. I didn't think it was all that interesting.
I watched it twice. I mean, it was like Link walking up to a big spider boss, and I don't even think he really fought it. I think he just kind of walked up to it, and that's when the video ended. There wasn't a whole lot to it. But yeah, I mean, I think the next Zelda game could certainly look that good. I think it could look even better.
I disagree in no small part because a significant amount of cinematography was being used to make that thing look as good as it possibly could.
Well, true. I mean, it looked like a cutscene. It did not look like
a game being played. I don't think when you play the game, on average, what you're seeing will look that detailed because ultimately they were putting the camera in places to emphasize parts of the model that they had detailed.
True. Yes.
So I don't think it'll look that high fidelity as you play. I think there may be moments where you see that, but ultimately I think those would be, you know, moments where the game is much more restricted in its focus on a thing.
Well, maybe, you know, I mean, one area where Nintendo could really do something different with 3D Zelda is to change up the camera angle. It's been this sort of behind-the-back thing for a long time, and, you know, I think that works pretty well, especially for Skyward Sword when you're using the motion control. I think it's a good angle to have it at. But, you know, they certainly could do something different. There's lots of 3D action games, 3D adventure games that have a looser camera than Zelda does. Either it's scripted or it's AI or you know, control it with a joystick or, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. And, you know, I have over the years, I've come to find the, you know, very strict, very tight behind the back view, sometimes pretty limiting for Zelda. I think it's actually nice. One of the good things about the whole Z targeting innovation is that it does let you break away from that. It lets you get a more of a side angle sometimes on the combat, which can be really helpful for certain battles. But, you know, I'd like to see them do something a little different with it. You know, Zelda's always been a series that we've seen from different angles. If you go back to the very first NES Legend of Zelda, they have those 2D side-scrolling parts, and they brought those back much bigger in Link's Awakening and the other handheld games. And you've got the overhead stuff, and then now with Link Between Worlds, it's still kind of overhead, but it's a bit more of an angle, and it looks a little bit different. So I'd be down for them to be trying to, you know, sort of try different perspectives for the 3D games as well. Or just do a side-scrolling game. I would love that, actually. Do a Zelda 2, but with really nice graphics. I think there's a lot to be... There's a lot of space to design around there with a Zelda game, but we'll see. We'll know in a couple of weeks, right? Maybe.
Nope.
But what is Zelda Williams Hopefully. Going to announce then, James? Huh?
Who the hell cares? Nintendo's not going to bring out a pseudo celebrity to announce one of the biggest games they're going to have for their platform.
It's going
to
be Good Will Hunting 2.
There you go.
Yeah, starring Channing Tatum.
It's gonna be FYI. Called Better Will Hunting. Done.
I think she's probably gonna be. I mean, I saw her a couple years ago at E3. She was the MC for the Zelda orchestra concert, and I thought she did a great job for that. And that was the only time I've ever seen her really do anything other than that commercial she did with her dad. But I liked her a lot, and I think she did a, you know, maybe that's just that again. Maybe it's just a new version of the Symphony of the Goddesses thing. Maybe they'll announce it and she'll go on tour with it or something. I don't know. I kind of doubt she's going to be involved in the big announcement of a new Zelda game, but who knows? I mean, a lot of people have noted she does kind of look, she has this kind of elfish quality to the way she looks, and she almost looks like a character
just
from
like
these
her
games.
Dad.
And I could see like her... Yeah, I mean, I could see her like being used as like a face model for Hyrule Warriors or something like that. That, you know, that would be a little bit strange.
Right. So you're basically saying this is Perfect Dark's face model announcement.
Something like that, yes.
You will be able to stab the shit out of the producer of this game as his face is grafted on your enemies.
It's perfect for the internet.
Well, in this case, you would be able to play as her, probably. I mean, we already know that Hyrule Warriors is going to have multiple playable characters, and maybe you can play as Zelda for the first time in forever, and maybe they'll use her as the character model for the Zelda character. I mean, it's gimmicky, but it's cool, and that it provides a very easy avenue for them to use her in the commercials for that game. So, you know, that wouldn't surprise me at all to see something like that. Or maybe she's going there for a complete, I mean, I think she's been to E3 bunches and bunches of times. She's a pretty, avid gamer, and maybe she's going there to announce or be involved with a completely different company. It's totally possible. But Nintendo's is the most obvious, obviously. All right, well, why don't we move on and have John talk... Wait, who was next?
Go, do John, that's fine.
Okay.
All right, Wilson writes, "Hey there, guys. I must first inform you all once again that the show is fantastic, and I appreciate your hard work so incredibly much. I don't know what I would do without this show. Now for the question. I have finally wrapped up high school and will be starting college in the fall at Georgia State University Honors College. I will be living on campus, and I'm a bit concerned regarding how it will affect the amount of time that I have to consume games. I was hoping that you guys could offer your perspectives on how college influenced your time with the hobby that we all love so much. Thanks in advance."
I had way more time to game in college than I did in high school.
Yep. Yeah, I totally did. I mean,
let's say right now, the amount of work you get assigned in college is a lot less than high school because they're not worried about giving you busy work because they have to grade that shit and they have hundreds of students. Well, and also you spend a lot less time in a classroom.
It also depends what you're majoring in as well.
Yeah, it does, but you still spend a lot less time in a classroom than you do in high school. You're not spending 8 hours a day at school.
Yeah, you do have a lot of free time, and I mean, you'll have days where you'll have two classes in the morning and you'll be done by 11 o'clock and you'll be like, yeah, I can basically
Or you'll
just...
have my schedule for a lot of the year where I was done at 10:30 on Thursday afternoon or morning. And then didn't have classes till Monday.
Yeah, I knew people who would try to get all their classes on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday so they had a 5-day weekend every single week.
Oh, I did that once. It was the best.
That's ridiculous. Yeah,
that
and
semester
I mean, and you
was
can,
amazing.
And you can stack things, too, such that you know, you'll kind of get a feel for what classes you can do well in and not really do a whole lot of work and which ones you really have to you know put your nose to the grindstone for.
Here's the dirty secret about college. A lot of those gen ed classes are really easy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially your freshman year, you're probably going to be taking a lot of real generic stuff.
Intro to Mass Comm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
that was Nat time.
You know, and it does depend maybe a little bit on your major, but I mean, a lot of freshmen don't even have a major, right? So you're taking English, you're taking math, and, you know, they're getting people from lots of different schools, different states, different countries coming in. And so a lot of times, the beginning level of these classes is going to be lower than what you learned in high school, especially if you were a good student in high school and you took honors classes or AP classes in high school as well. I think probably a lot of times what you'll find is the first half of the semester in college will be really easy, and maybe it's not until the second half where they start to get into some stuff that you don't know as well and you have to study more. I mean, you know, they're... A lot of times college classes don't assign very much homework. They assign a lot of studying. So they'll expect you to do a lot of the prep for the class outside of the lecture. But, you know, in some cases you may be able to get away without doing that. You probably should do it, but no one's going to force you to do it. And it's not like homework where you're going to get a bad grade if you don't do it. It's more like you're going to get to the test and not really understand anything. But, you know, hopefully you have a sense of your own abilities and how much time you need to commit to something.
Right. It'll depend on the class, obviously. I mean, when I was in high-level mathematics classes, yeah, I had to study a lot. When I was doing, like, lit 200-level literature classes, whatever. I read the book. I'm good.
Yeah. And, I mean, it also depends on what you get involved in extracurricular-wise as well.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, things like if you... I'm sure most people probably that like this podcast would not could care less, but if you join a frat, obviously fraternity stuff is going to take up a ton of your time. If you don't do that, then you're not going to have, you know, you're going to have tons of free time.
Well, and frat guys play video games anyway, but...
Yeah, and I mean, and also, you know, other clubs, anything
other
you get
clubs.
Involved in.
I can't name any, but
yeah,
I can't name
any,
other clubs.
But I don't know, chess club, AV club, I don't
chess
know,
club.
Whatever, what have
yeah.
you.
Yeah. There you go.
There's probably a gaming club on most college campuses. Actually.
Oh, I would imagine there's
now,
probably.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgia State's not a small university. I'd imagine there's at least one. Probably multiple.
Yeah.
Probably highly specialized gaming clubs. There's probably a Smash Brothers club. You should not like those.
I would also recommend trying to. I would try to check out some extracurriculars that don't involve video games as well. But
yeah,
you know, and
or drinking.
Yeah.
Don't overdose. Don't overdose. Everything in moderation, everything in moderation, I say as I'm sitting here staring at my PS3, my 360, my Xbox One, my Wii U, my Vita, my 3DS, but everything in moderation.
But, yeah.
Everything.
Do as I say, not as I do.
That's the thing, though. When you're in college, you don't have that much disposable income yet, so you probably can get a lot of mileage out of one game or two. I remember my first year of college, I still wasn't back into gaming, so I didn't really play anything, but eventually I got a GameCube, and I played Animal Crossing. That's when I really got into it, because, well, you know, like the mornings that I don't have classes, I can do the morning stuff in Animal Crossing, and then it was actually really suited to my schedule. You know, I could play at any day time of the day, so that was pretty cool.
I'd say my first year of college, I had a lot of time for games. That was the year that
when
Perfect Dark came out the summer before I went to college in 2000. And that was the year that I it was right after my first E3. So I was gaming crazy, and and I got to college and I found out, oh, all these other people like video games too. Maybe not as much as I do, but they like them and they're happy to play them, and it's a good social thing to do. And so we played a whole bunch of Perfect Dark, Mario Kart 64, Blitz. We played, and that fall, Majora's Mask came out. So I played through all of Majora's Mask in my dorm and had a lot of people come in and watch me play it, you know, because it was interesting. So it's a good time to play some local multiplayer stuff. I would definitely try to get some people interested in that, because you can have some really, really good times. And especially living in the dorm, it sounds like if you're staying on campus, you'll probably have a lot of access to other people who, you know, maybe are only casually interested in video games, but they have free time as well, and they're certainly willing to pop in there and play with different groups of people. And it can be a really good like social lubricant. So I would say,
yeah,
you
may find it may even, you know, change your tastes in some of the games that you like, and you may enjoy certain genres
right.
that you maybe didn't think you would like before when you play them with other people.
Yeah,
because it does really change the dynamic of things.
I used to play a lot of Tekken, and I wouldn't play Tekken now, but when I lived in the dorm and I had friends and we would get together and we just laugh at it because it was so stupid. You know, we'd play with the pandas and the devil dude and whatever. But, you know, we thought it was really fun.
Of all the games, of all the stupid games I played in college, NES pinball is the one that a friend of mine and I would get addicted to. Like, we'd just keep playing that stupid game and talk about girls or whatever.
Yeah.
It was good
but
times.
But it's like, yeah, that's the whole thing. It's not really so much about the game as it is about the experience that you have playing it with other people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. You can play any kind of game and have a good time doing it when you have a whole bunch of people that are usually drunk.
Yeah, but I would also say be prepared for college to get harder after the first year, especially after the first 2 years. It will get a lot harder as you get deeper into your major. And also, take college seriously. You know, someone is paying a lot of money for you to be there, either you or your family or a generous scholarship donor or someone is paying a lot of money for you to be there. And I think you should treat it, you know, if not like a job, because that's not really even possible, but take it seriously and put a lot of work into it. Because I can tell you that once you get out of college, it's pretty easy to tell who took it seriously and who did not. And it's pretty easy to tell who really got, I mean, college is such a huge experience and it's so unstructured for a lot of people. You really get out of it what you put into it. And if you show up to college and you're lazy and you don't really care and all you do is drink and play games and chat up girls and you don't go to class, or you go to class but you don't study, or you study but you don't really prepare for the test or do your homework or really care about what you're doing, I mean, you should be there by choice, right? So you should take classes that you're interested in that are meaningful to you. And when you take classes, you should put work into them and actually care about the result. Like, you should care about what you're learning. It's not like high school where you're in there because you have to be or because you have to prepare for the next thing. College is really
trying to keep you off the streets.
Yeah, college is about you, and it's about crafting an experience that will help you grow into an adult and be a more useful member of society and be able to do things that people who don't go to college can't do. And if you go to college but you don't really go to class, if you don't really learn anything, then you didn't really go to college, and you've really kind of wasted a lot of time and money being there. So when you're there, I mean, I say this as someone who was in college for 10 years, so obviously I have pretty strong feelings about this, but I think if you go to college, you should fucking go to college. You should take it seriously. Yeah. You should have fun. Definitely have fun.
My advice too
But
my advice too, Johnny would probably agree with me on this, but I would say do it all in one shot while you're there. Because once you leave college, you're not going to want to go back to college.
Well, you might want to, but you might not be able to. So, I mean,
There's you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know, various things.
Trust me on
can...
this. Stay in college as long as you can.
yes.
Take it from an
expert. I always laugh when people bitch and they're like, "Oh man, I'm so sick of X amount. You know, my senior year in college. I'm like, dude." You just wait.
Well, I'll say, if you're sick of college, you're doing it wrong, because college is so adaptable and flexible of an experience. You can really create almost any college experience that you want. So, you know, if you're not having some fun, if you're not getting some satisfaction, if you don't feel like you're learning anything, maybe like rearrange your priorities or consider a different major or something. You know, for sometimes it's just maybe move to a different apartment, like make new friends, hang out with different people, because that is an experience that you very much create for yourself. Enjoy it, Wilson. Congrats. Good luck. Play video games and do other things also. You'll be fine. Okay. James is going to read the next email.
Ryan from Anaheim writes, "The removal of Kinect from Xbox One got me thinking Nintendo should remove the Wara Wara Plaza from Wii U. It's completely useless and only slows down the initial boot up time. I used to enjoy the Wara Wara Plaza when the majority of Miiverse posts that popped up were amazing works of art, but now it's mostly contextless musings. I have no control over what displays and it has no relevance to me. Nintendo is already doing an update to add a quick start feature, but I think they should take it a step further and completely overhaul the Wii U interface. In its place, Nintendo should add some game-like features that actually engage the user in the same way that 3DS does. Street Pass works so well for the 3DS because there's a Pavlovian response to seeing a green light. I think that the light and flashing buttons on the screen and just have to check them. Obviously, the Wii U can't have Street Pass games, but it could have its own unique games in place of Wara Wara Plaza. What do you guys think?"
Well, I do agree that the Wara Wara Plaza has not really convinced me to check out any games that I would not have been interested in the first place, or that I did not know about already. I've never really seen one of those icons and thought, "Hey, that looks interesting. Let me check it out." There's a failure there. It's about interesting once a year when it's your birthday, and if you've got several Mii's accounts on your Wii U, then like they clap for you and cheer, and it's like it's a beautiful 3 seconds. But
I do kind of like the murmuring of all the Mii's gathered in the plaza. Like if you turn the system on, but then kind of walk away for a minute, which is a thing I do because it does take a minute or two to kind of boot up and get to the menu. A lot of times I'll be like over in the kitchen getting a glass of water or something, and I'll hear the kind of all the little, you know, murmurs and all the weird sounds that all the Miis make. And it's cute, but it's really not useful. I mean, I was concerned when they first showed this because they didn't show it alongside the channel menu that you get on the gamepad screen. And I think, you know, because you do have that very straightforward utilitarian practical menu down on the gamepad screen, it's not so bad. But I don't object to them doing something a little more creative up on the TV, but I kind of wish it was more interesting than the Wara Wara Plaza. And I was just thinking about it, you know, there's something similar in Nintendo Land, that whole park area where you walk around and you see all the doodads that you've collected, but there's also a bunch of people walking around. There's your friends, there's strangers, they're telling you various kinds of things. And then you have all these gates that you can go into to get to the different games. Why don't they just take that idea and why don't they redesign the Wara? They can still call it Wara Wara Plaza if they are so attached to that weird name. But
they don't really call it anything, to be honest. Name doesn't really show up.
It doesn't show up in the menu, but that's what they sort of colloquially call it. But why don't they like redesign the Wara Wara Plaza so that it feels more like a three-dimensional space that you walk around in, and you can walk up to the different gates and go see games or go to that Miiverse community, and you have people walk, and maybe the things that you collect, the stamps that you've unlocked in different games or the achievements that you have or whatever, maybe those appear as these different structures and toys, and you know, maybe it imports the stuff from Nintendo Land and you can have all those gizmos out there too. But like that would be a little more immersive, I feel like. And you would still have the menu on the gamepad. So if you don't want to mess with all that, you don't have to. But I feel like if they're going to throw something up there, they should make it a little better than what they currently
see,
have.
I don't think we can just jump to the assumption that this email makes that that's the cause of the Wii U being slow to boot up.
No, I agree. I agree with you. Yeah, I think it's a distraction, maybe, but you know.
But to me, when I look at that, the Wara Wara Plaza, I look at it from sort of a merchandising perspective. Of this is Guillaume says it's never made him interested in a game he wasn't interested in before, but he is a more informed consumer than I would assume the average Wii U owner.
It could be more effective if that's the main goal, is to sort of float things.
But see,
to
I think
you, then...
I think having it zoomed way out like that means they could squeeze a ton of games on the screen at one time.
But they're just icons. I mean, they're not
representative. They are icons,
of what
but
those
there is
games...
activity going around these icons. There's things popping up that maybe grab your attention. I mean, right? The only purpose it serves in that context, before you do anything to it, is to just grab your attention, and I think it does do that. I don't think that the quality of post on Miiverse is good enough to make that in and of itself interesting.
Yeah,
it adds up to a bunch of white noise, really.
Right, and they also only show partial messages, right? Like, they'll show a full drawing if someone used the drawing feature, but if it's a text message, most of the time you miss the end of the message. You can't see it unless you click on the actual thing.
I would say that if I was going to make a change, I would shift to they be non-text based posts.
Like, they should really show the screen captures, because they don't show that.
Yeah,
on
but
the
they don't
want
to take up too much space. I think that's the trade-off they're working with.
But they're only showing one message at a time. I don't think there's not really a lack of space if you're only showing.
Are they only showing
one?
I thought they'd have some in different communities popping up.
Well, sure. Like, you've got all the icons. You've got about 8 of them, but there is no more than 2 people saying something at the same time.
I think the bigger changes they could make, and again, this is kind of coming from a merchandising perspective, is they should make those icons more representative of new content that's out there.
Yeah.
If, you know, every Thursday, every game that's come out for Wii U that has a Miiverse community, because not every Wii U game has a Miiverse community. The devs or the publisher has to essentially request one. Essentially,
yeah. I wonder why they wouldn't.
I don't know. Maybe they just don't want to have to administer it. I don't know. But it would just be, you know, maybe every game that came out this Thursday gets an icon, and whatever chatter is going on shows up out of the group. And you know, maybe you pick a couple bigger releases for a couple weeks. And then you rotate those out as other bigger games come out, and you just sort of keep it fresh that way. Or maybe when Nintendo has a big game they want to show off, you know, way in advance, and do something like the Smash Bros. Community, and they just let that roll for a while. I think it's the opportunity to show off things that they want people who own the system, who maybe haven't bought the game, to see. But more importantly, it gives them a direct vector from that screen. It should be you tap that icon, and you can go straight to the eShop and buy the game right there.
Yeah, and I think there's an eShop icon that pops up if it's available.
See, here's the thing. They need to get it to the point where you shouldn't have to go into another application, where it's just seamlessly
moving from
place to place.
Well,
that's a pervasive problem with the Wii U eShop. It's not integrated in anything, because... Child of Light, playing it on a Wii U and playing it on another system is a completely different experience, because the other systems will shove the DLC in your face, will ask you, or at least the Xbox One, from what I've seen, like, they'll, okay, buy this pack of gems or whatever, and you play, automatically installs, I assume, but on a Wii U, it's all, well, you want to download DLC, go to the eShop, exit the game, and go to the eShop. You want Uplay, go to the eShop.
I don't understand that because... Well, why would you want Uplay? I don't understand that because... And the 3DS has no problem letting you buy DLC right from the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that may be a situation they need to resolve. But I think the final state of the Miiverse for it to achieve Nintendo's strategic objective for it, or for the Wara Wara Plaza specifically, is that it is sort of advertising for recent releases or big games they want excitement around, or maybe a game goes on sale and they throw it up there. And
yeah, there's a lot of things along
that
line
that
they could do.
Right, I mean, you need to be able to buy the game, from that screen without any kind of loading, because it needs to be impulse buys.
What I'd like to see is just for them to give us a little more control over it, and maybe just select different plazas that you can boot into, depending on your taste and the way you use the system. They've already got that Animal Crossing plaza, which is useless, but it's pretty. Like, it, some people would probably really like it if that's what you saw when you turned on the system, instead of a bunch of Miis standing around. The Nintendo Land idea could be another one. Maybe there's another one where it basically just shows you the eShop. It's like a three-dimensional version of the eShop where they show you all the newest releases, all the specials, all the themes, the sales that they're doing, stuff like that, you know, the latest demos or whatever. And maybe that could be your plaza. I don't necessarily know that I would want that to be the default, because I know some people would find that kind of creepy and like a little bit of a hard sell if that was just kind of up on the screen as soon as you turn the system on. But for someone like me who goes in the eShop at least once or twice a week, that'd actually be really useful, you know, and I would love the ability to just opt into that. And I would find that much more useful and interesting than what they currently have up there. So for me, I would like a little bit of customization over the Warawara Plaza.
Yeah. I mean, have it as more of a functional space. I mean, I know it would have been helpful for me. I mean, on your eShop idea, if it just said, here's what you missed, here's what's been posted in the eShop over the last, since the last time you logged on to the Nintendo Network. Yeah.
Well, John, I mean, for you and me, that'd mean like it'd just be completely full of everything on the eShop.
True.
It's just too much. Not enough space.
Indeed.
Yeah, you guys don't use it as actively as Guillaume and I do.
Nope.
Yeah. Something a little bit more interactive would just already be a good improvement. All you can do literally is watch your Miis walk around and interact or not interact most of the time with each other. So yeah, if you could just guide your Mii and actually go talk to people and see what they did instead of just clicking them, it's very impersonal and kind of non-Nintendo.
Yeah, you're not even really controlling a character in the Warawara Plaza. No. You're sort of this weird bird's eye view and you're just kind of panning around, but you know, you can't really do anything with these people. I find it really odd.
Well, it's not a game, though. I mean, that's the mental jump you need to make. It's an advertising mechanism.
Yeah, I mean, it's a common area, but they don't really do much with that common area.
It's a poor advertising mechanism, is what I'm.
Well, that's this maybe, but it's not a game, so the lack of interactivity is not that shocking to me personally.
It's very un-Nintendo, I think.
Well, there's a lot of things you could say that about the Wii.
Yeah,
I guess so.
And then there's a lot of things you could say a little too Nintendo. So, I conceptually like what they're trying to do. When I think about it from a business standpoint, I think it is a smart idea. I think it is currently a crippled individual. I think it needs help. I think the same basic structure could be rebuilt, or could be not even rebuilt, could be amended in a way that makes it much more effective at what they are trying to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe we'll see. I mean, it's certainly within their power to, you know, rewrite the operating system or the whole user interface. I mean, Microsoft's done it. They've made a big name for themselves out of it. You know, it wasn't possible back on the Wii. With Wii U, I think it is much more flexible. One other option, by the way, to go back to my sort of user selection idea, you could pick a Miiverse that you're really interested in and just have it load up that. That's one of my big problems with Miiverse. I love the idea of it, but the fact that it's this app that you have to go into, even when you like pause, like the process of getting a screenshot into a Miiverse post is way ridiculous, you know? You have to like hit the home, and by the way, it never tells you how to do it. You just kind of have to hear about it. You have to like hit the home screen in the middle of the game on the screenshot that you want, then load up Miiverse, then create a post, then it asks you if you want to upload the screenshot instead of like drawing something. And I feel like that stuff could be a lot more streamlined, but even integrating Miiverse into the Warawara Plaza, so you're not only just reading random posts from random games that you may not even own, but let's say there's a community that you're really into, Smash Brothers maybe would be a good example coming up, where you really want to find out what people are talking about on Miiverse, what your friends are saying about that stuff, and why can't I just have that show on the screen as soon as I turn on the system? Why do I always have to hit Miiverse and then wait 30 seconds for that whole thing to load up and then navigate all the way through there to try to find the stuff I want? they've done so much with Miiverse to improve it, but it's all on the side. You know, it's all this kind of web app that they obviously have a lot of control over, and they can do a lot of upgrades to it. But it's really not integrated with the system very well at all, I feel.
Yeah, it's kind of kept off in its own little area. It doesn't really, yeah, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really feel Miiverse like it's as impactful deserves as it better. Could be.
Like, it's a really cool feature, but it's a little too hard to use right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like it could be integrated into that operating system a lot better so that it was easier to get to, easier to see what your friends were doing on Miiverse, easier to check your messages, and just less of a hassle. Like, I would use Miiverse a lot more if I didn't actually have to think consciously, oh, yeah, I should go check Miiverse. You know,
yeah, I mean, it feels bolted on.
I've had the Miiverse icon blinking on my Wii U gamepad for like 2.5 months.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if you sent me a message. I just have no reason to go in there.
Yeah, my usage is very inconsistent. Unless the game is made specifically to remind me to check Miiverse,
yeah,
then I kind of forget about it. And unless I see something really cool and I want to share, and that's, I don't know, not as often as I'd like, I suppose. There's nothing to do there. Mm-hmm.
I feel like also Miiverse would really benefit from having like better drawing tools. You know, color would be nice. I don't see why that can't be done. It's not PictoChat anymore. You know, we've come a long way from PictoChat. I feel like you should be able to use color. You know, I mean, you can use Art Academy to draw things, but then they just show up as screenshots. So it's not really the same thing. And there's a lot more they can do. I mean, it's such a rich idea. There's a lot of like really fascinating aspects of the Wii U interface, including Miiverse and the Warawara Plaza and the eShop, and they're all like huge improvements over anything they've done in the past. But it still feels like they're not quite there. You know, like they haven't really gelled together to make this like a really really fun system to just turn on and just explore. You know, for me, it's like I'm actually kind of looking forward to that quick boot menu, because usually when I turn on the Wii U, I already know what I'm going to play and I'm just going to jump into it. Or maybe there's, you know, I'm going to pick among two or three different things and I just want to launch into it as soon as I can. And clearly the system is set up to make you want to explore the space, you know, and go be part of the community and hear what other people are playing and what they think of all this stuff. And that stuff is out there, but it's a little hard to get to for me right now. And if, you know, on 3DS, it has a lot of the same issues, but on there, I mean, they added that way after the fact. I think the fact that Miiverse is on 3DS at all and that it works as well as it does is really impressive. But for Wii U,
it is a cesspool, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff on there. That's part of the 3DS fun.
The 3DS Miiverse is the ultimate cesspool.
Well, it's all the same Miiverse.
Well, yeah, but the posts and the 3DS games.
Oh, for specific, I mean,
just go look. Sure. They're nightmare fuel.
Yeah, but I mean, you can use Wii U to post about 3DS games. You can use your phone to post about 3DS games. So
yeah,
Miiverse is like one of the best, most exciting things they've done in a long time. But for me, it's not quite there yet. But I think it's getting there. You know, they're still working on it. They're continually making it better and better and better. And there's so much potential in that feature. So I hope they keep it up. I hope they keep doing cool things with it. Well, let's move on to the final email this week. It's from our old friend, guy who has written into the show for many years, Mr. Adolf Vega, and he writes, "Okay, remember Mario 3 on GBA that had the e-reader cards? Expand that out on Wii U, and this is my idea for NFC Mario Wii U game. Super Mario All-Stars HD+. Mario 1, 2, 3 world and lost levels with super pretty graphics, a united graphical theme between games, and fully orchestrated music with up to 4 players, and each game has an extra world, and make a level upload to YouTube option. And the kicker is scanning NFC figures into the game adds to the gameplay with characters and power-ups not normally found in that game. Just imagine the insane awesomeness of Mario 3 with 4 players. One person playing as Donkey Kong riding Yoshi, another person playing as Peach with a hammer suit, another person playing as Kirby who's just floating around the screen, and one person is Double Cherry Mario. If you want to play Mario All-Stars HD+ without the figures, you can, but you get to do so much more by buying all the figurines. What do you guys think of this idea?"
I good God.
It sounds pretty cool, but it also kind of sounds like Super Mario War, you know, a bootleg, not bootleg game, but, you know, like one of those
fan-made
games. Yeah, ROM hack.
Yeah, which is, that's really cool, actually. Those things are really, really awesome.
The only part that I really don't like is the idea of having a consistent graphical interface for each of these games. I would almost rather they, if they're going to remake all these games, they remake them in a way that plays up the graphical differences from each game.
Distinctive from the other ones.
One is
just
distinct
because...
from two is distinct from three, which, I mean, obviously Super Mario World looks incredibly different because it's a different system altogether.
They all have different art styles, but you could make them all. You could use the same engine, I feel like, and you still differentiate them through the artwork.
Yeah, but that's not make them all consistently looking. I would almost want them to make like Super Mario the original just seem to look even more primitive compared to even 2.
Huh.
Like I would want to really play up these differences because the idea is you're just going to throw random shit into this game to just make it crazy. I would either want all those things to be transformed to the art style of the game that they're now resident in.
Oh, that'd be
or
cool.
Or to stand out completely and just seem totally out of place. To either play that up or play that up in one direction or the other.
So what do you mean, like kind of in Super Paper Mario where they become giant characters and they're all pixelated and it's completely, you know, it's kind of the Super Mario 1 style except that it's still Super Paper Mario?
Yeah, but in this case, it's like that because the world they're in is Mario 1. So you
right.
drop, you know, if let's say you drop Hammer Suit Peach in there, well, they're going to have to figure out what an 8-bit Hammer Suit Peach would look like. But I think that would add to sort of the appeal of continuing to experiment with the game.
Yeah,
because
true.
you'd want to see, like, all right, what's this jerk going to look like when I drop it in, you know, Doki Doki Panic reskinned Mario?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how does it
interact? What does Mario look like in a Kirby game?
Right.
Right.
I mean, they could release. I don't. I mean, we kind of mentioned the e-reader. I think in passing as one of the possible analogs here.
Yeah.
I mean, throwing things into, basically making this as a conduit where you can throw things into other games. Like, I would imagine for this to work, they'd have to do more than just, you know, a Mario remake. They'd have to make multiple games that support these same figurines in a similar way. I think that's a way that they could do it without the whole thing feeling exploitive. Because ultimately you end up with a situation where you have a fully functional game on its own. But I think at the same time, the experience would feel somewhat nerfed, so they would have to be real careful with how they present it.
Yeah, I mean, you could also have an NFC figurine, you could also have it theme the game in a certain way. So just make the game look entirely different. Not just the characters, but just overhaul everything.
You get a figurine that looks like Mario in 8-bit, and you drop it on there, and the whole game goes 8-bit?
8-bit's the whole thing. That would be cool.
Oh, God.
That'd be awesome, but that sounds like a lot of work to program.
I mean, they wouldn't be able to do that on a large scale, but I think that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Where would that data be? Would it be residing
It would be on the game.
It
would have to be programmed to work the way, but it's just like that with all the Spyro and Disney Infinity crap.
Yeah.
If you get a figurine that came from a later game, it just doesn't recognize it. It goes, I don't know what this is. What are you doing?
Yeah.
It's part of the game. So you'd have to do something where essentially, all right, all the games with red or all the figures with red bases, this game can recognize. And the next games, all right, they can recognize all the red and the green ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next, they can recognize all the red, green, and blues.
Yeah, I mean, you could have like a series of games for that.
Right, and then you could just put on the game itself, either in the eShop or on the box, hey, works with red and green-based Nintendo NFC figurines.
Yeah.
And that way it is painfully apparent which ones they work with.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do need to be that upfront with it. Like, no, they are color-coded. If you can't figure that out, I'm sorry.
You have to have an orange alert system.
There you go.
But, like, you know, if people aren't familiar with the whole e-reader situation in Mario 3... they might think all this sounds super crazy and completely unrealistic, but Nintendo actually did this. I mean, with Mario 3 on...
Now, it was super crazy, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, you could put a cape into Mario 3, the cape from Super Mario World. You could put... I don't think you could do Yoshi, but
no.
There was some really weird stuff that they had. You could also create your own levels in that game, sort of. I'm getting ahead of myself.
They had levels.
You weren't supposed to be able to create your own levels. Yeah,
but you could.
You could. People found out ways to print their own custom cards, and like they reverse engineered the whole system, which is pretty amazing. But Mario 3 essentially had like a kind of a world designer built into it that you could use the cards to, you know, give it certain inputs and it would generate that level. But people found out that, oh yeah, well, if we print our own cards, we can make whatever levels we want. And
right, it had behind the scenes, it had a world builder.
Yeah, so meaning that the levels that you were playing weren't just on the cards, you know?
They weren't just on the game.
They were on the cards. They weren't just already pre-built into the game. The game had the
right. They weren't just a toolbox. Key to get in.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting idea, I think, figures, and that would be a pretty cool use of them, and it would be a good way to bring back that thing that not many people ever got to use, the e-reader, right? So it'd be cool to bring that back and give that a bigger shot. And I do like the idea. I mean, if you look at like NES Remix 1 and 2, like they're already doing a lot of this kind of stuff, you know, putting characters from one game into another game and hacking old ROMs and stuff like
that. What if NFC Remix already has this built in and we just don't know it yet?
Actually, what was running in my head was Dr. Luigi. What if now that the year of Luigi is over, he doesn't get his own game anymore and you can just put an Peach NFC figurine and Dr. Peach is here.
It would have been better if, like, after the year Luigi just ended, there was an update and it turned it back to Dr. Mario.
Oh, poor guy.
Luigi gets no love. No love at all. I mean, he did almost bankrupt the company, though.
Yep.
Ha. Huh. Okay, well, thank you for the idea, Mr. Vega, and we shall see what they do. But this seems like might not be completely bonkers and off the mark. I think something in this direction is totally feasible. So I think
it's important to note completely bonkers and off the mark are not necessarily gonna go hand in hand. They could be completely bonkers and still be on top.
True. Yeah. I mean, and you know, Mario All-Stars is a very beloved game. I think doing a new version of it where they, you know, did yet another pass on the graphics to make them all look completely different. I think there would be plenty of interest in that. Even though everybody's played all these games, if you change enough stuff, you get people interested.
Does that run the risk of cannibalizing? No, they don't give a shit. I was going to ask if that runs the risk of cannibalizing Virtual Console sales, but I don't even know.
I think most of the people who bought Virtual Console games on the Wii U already had them on the Wii, so what is Nintendo losing? $1 per game?
$2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the hell they're doing, so that's fine. I think it'd be part of their calculus, certainly.
Yeah. All right, so that is going to wrap up this episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can get your email on the show maybe next week. by emailing rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Tell us about your E3 ideas and your reactions to all the weird news that's been going on. Freaking GameCube controller adapter for Wii U. Lots of strange stuff being announced. So we would love to hear from all of you. And we will definitely read your email and we'll get as many on the show as we can. And thanks everyone who has been writing in. We've actually gotten... There was one email we got last week that was so long, there's just no way to read it on the show. But we really do appreciate the effort and the thought that's put into all of these emails that we get. And before we go, I wanted to let people know that I'm on the new episode of Radio Trivia Podcast Edition with TYP. We played music from lots of good games, games that you definitely know about and have played. Some really familiar stuff and some great music on that episode. So you can find that on iTunes if you search for Radio Trivia or just on our website. Go into the podcast section and you'll see it up there. I think it's episode 123, something like that. And it's a good episode, and I'm sure there will be more of those coming out soon. But we've all been on Radio Trivia, and so if you like what you hear, you should go through the back catalog. Those shows really don't age. So the backlog is always ripe for the picking. And finally, I think we should mention a little bit about our E3 plans. Two of us, James and I, will be at the show, and we're going to be recording stuff. I don't think this year we're going to be doing daily episodes of RFN.
I don't think so, no.
We'll be doing something else daily. I don't know if we really want to talk about that yet, James.
There will be something visual happening. We're going in kind of blindfolded on what resources will be available to us to an extent.
A daily graphical adventure, point and click your way through E3 news.
You don't really need much to just streak the show floor at E3, James. You don't really need many resources for that.
I was born with everything I needed to do that, John. Hotel internet notwithstanding, let's put it that way.
John is just so fixated on the streak.
Yep.
That's why they call him the streak.
Yeah. Boobadab. But anyway, James is underselling it. He actually has some pretty grand plans, and I won't spoil them because, sure, some of it may not work out. But we're going to try to do some really cool stuff at E3 this year that we have not done before. I think RFN will probably be more of an end of the week thing. I might record some things throughout the week and then try to piece them all together at the end. Maybe some interviews, maybe sit down with some people, but it'll be maybe one episode of RFN coming out of E3 this year, but there will be lots of other content, and we're getting pretty excited about the plans. So please look forward to it. We'll have one more somewhat normal episode of RFN
God,
before.
It's like in 10 days.
Yeah, I know. We will have one more episode before the show that we'll record next week, and we'll try to catch up on things. So send us those emails, and thanks for listening.
Bye. Oh, that's the end of the show. Bye.
Later.
Here he comes.
Boogity, boogity.
There he goes.
Boogity, boogity.
Oh yes, they call it.